Fermentation Fest starts this weekend. For 9 days, this Reedsburg festival will celebrate live culture of all types, from art to sauerkraut and poetry to pickles.
Calling itself a live culture convergence, the festival will feature food tastings and demos, cooking classes, art installations, and live performances. Fermentation master Sandor Katz will be there. He's a food writer, a DIY food activist, and self-proclaimed fermentation revivalist. He's also the author of the book The Art of Fermentation and Wild Fermentation, which have just been revised and re-released.
Sandor Katz joins us now. Sandor, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
You've described yourself as a fermentation revivalist. That implies bringing something back, but almost with a religious feel to it. Can you talk about your role as a fermentation revivalist?
Well, I mean, that's kind of where the wordplay comes in. But, you know, fermentation is an incredibly important practice. And, you know, it is part of the story of how people have made effective use of the food resources available to them in every part of the world. All of our greatest delicacies are products of fermentation. Unfortunately, in our age of food mass production and, convenience one-stop shopping, most people have lost any direct connection to this important, transformative phenomenon that's so important to our food. So, these are, critical cultural practices, an essential piece of the puzzle of how people have made effective use of food resources. So, I'm a revivalist in the sense that, I am trying to revive the skills, the knowledge, the cultural practices, that have never disappeared, but they have lost prominence. And, in many cases, people have, not been passing down these cultural traditions from generation to generation. So I think, they are in need of revival at exactly the same time as, we are in need of, more nutritious food and a greater connection to our food and how it's produced.
One thing I've learned at past fermentation fests is that we come into contact with fermented foods that have been through some kind of fermentation process all the time and are really not aware of it. Can you talk about the range of foods we might encounter that have some kind of fermentation?
Sure. I mean, almost every individual in almost every part of the world eats and drinks products of fermentation every day. One scholar of fermentation came to the conclusion that one-third of all food that human beings put into our mouths has been transformed by fermentation before we eat it. In the standard American diet, some examples would be coffee, bread, cheese, cured meats, all the condiments we like to put on our sandwiches, and chocolate, vanilla. I could go on and on. I mean, people eat and drink products of fermentation every day without being aware of it. You don't have to be aware of it to, sort of enjoy the flavors of fermentation. You walk into a gourmet food store anywhere, and almost all you're going to see and smell are products of fermentation.
It'd be a pretty bleak world without all of those things, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, you're interested in how fermented foods contribute to our health, and by eating more fermented foods and less mass-produced foods, we'll be healthier people. Can you talk about that?
Well, sure. I mean, there are lots of different aspects to it. I mean, for one thing, the process of fermentation pre-digests food and breaks down nutrients into more easily accessible forms. So, the nutrients in our food tend to be more available to us after the food has been fermented. But, beyond that, there's all this new interest in the microbiome and and recognition that the bacteria that are part of our bodies play incredibly huge roles in terms of our ability to effectively digest food, in terms of our immune function. We're learning that it also extends to our mental health and almost every aspect of our functionality, and yet because of chemical exposure, to chlorine, antibacterial cleansing products, antibiotic drugs, we are all walking around with diminished biodiversity of these bacteria that are so important to us. And eating sauerkraut, yogurt, other kinds of fermented foods that have not been cooked or heat processed so that the bacteria are still alive and intact is a great way of restoring biodiversity in our intestines so that we can have you know, better overall digestion, better overall immune function, and potentially better overall mental health.
Sandor, I better ask you before we get too much further, can you give us a basic definition of what it means when we say a food is fermented?
Well, I would define fermentation in lay terms as the transformative action of microorganisms. They're, you know, foods or beverages, you know, that have been transformed in some way by yeast or other types of microorganisms acting on the food.
We are talking to Sandor Katz about fermentation. He'll be appearing at Fermentation Fest here in Wisconsin. Sandor, there's a theme that keeps coming up on our show lately with different guests, this idea that microbes, bacteria, not that long ago, we thought of them almost exclusively as pathogens, as bad guys, as things that cause disease. It seems like we're undergoing this huge change where we realize they do, a lot of them, way more good than harm.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, you know, for any of us who grew up in the United States in the 20th century, you know, we were indoctrinated into what I would describe as the war on bacteria. And so, you know, in our imaginations, you know, bacteria are primarily, you know, related to, you know, disease and danger and possible death. And, you know, certainly in the last couple of decades, you know, science has increasingly been coming to the recognition that, you know, bacteria are essentially the building blocks of life. In evolutionary biology, there is a broad consensus that all life is evolved from bacteria. And the flip side of this is that no multicellular form of life has ever lived without bacteria. They're just essential parts of us. In our human bodies, you know, our bodily cells are outnumbered by bacteria that we're host to, and these bacteria, you know, provide an array of essential services for us, and we couldn't possibly thrive. We probably couldn't even possibly survive without them. So, you know, we are utterly dependent on bacteria, you know, which in a certain way are our ancestors. So, and that's not to deny the existence of certain organisms that, you know, can make us sick, but in reality, our greatest protection against the organisms that can make us sick is to have a healthy, thriving population of bacteria that keep us healthy, because they're what protect us from the really limited range of pathogens.
All right, Sandor, I want to try this at home now. And I think what a lot of people might think about, you know, fermenting, I think about my grandparents making their own sauerkraut. I understand you have some more general advice if we want to ferment vegetables, not just turning cabbage into sauerkraut. Talk us through some of the basics of what we can do at home.
Sure. I mean, sauerkraut is a method. It's the dry salting method of fermenting vegetables. And you can ferment really any kinds of vegetables using this method. So the essential condition is getting the vegetables submerged. If the vegetables have a continual flow of oxygen in fresh air, then they will generally mold. So the strategy for making sauerkraut is getting the vegetables submerged under their own juices. So you chop or grate or otherwise shred the vegetables, which creates surface area. Then you lightly salt them. Don't get too caught up on a precise amount of salt. Salt them to taste. Mix it up. I like to get in with my hands and squeeze them, which kind of breaks down some cell walls and helps release juice. And I do that for 5 or 10 minutes until the vegetables get nice and juicy. I can pick up a little handful, squeeze them, and they're like a wet sponge, and juice comes out. Once the vegetables are nice and juicy like that, and I taste them and make sure that I have enough salt, you know, just for my own culinary pleasure, you know, then I just stuff them into a jar. I like to use a wide-mouth quart jar. A wide-mouth quart jar will take about 2 pounds of vegetables, and just sort of stuff it in there with some force so you get the vegetables submerged under liquid. And then, you know, ferment them. The amount of time is not standardized. It's really subjective. You know, it'll get more acidic, more sour as the days and weeks pass by. And some people love it best after, you know, 4 or 5 days. And some people like to give it 2 or 3 weeks. If you had a cool, unheated cellar, you could let it keep fermenting slowly all winter long. You know, which is the traditional way that it was done. But, you know, if it ever reaches a point where you think, wow, that's strong enough, I don't want it to get any more sour than that, move it into your fermentation slowing device in your kitchen, which is what a refrigerator amounts to.
I've got a producer here making a face at these descriptions. And sauerkraut, a lot of things like that, an acquired taste. Can you encourage us to, whether we make it ourselves or try somebody else's, to give more fermented foods a try?
Well, I mean, I would say, like, for, you know, for people who don't like sour, who think that they don't like sauerkraut, try a lightly fermented batch. I mean, the traditional food is something that people would ferment for, you know, weeks and months, and it would get very, very sour. And if that's too strong of a flavor for you, try fermenting it for, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 days, and you might love it. I've had many people say, I thought I didn't like sauerkraut, but this is delicious. But you just need to bear in mind that the acidity accumulates over time. But yes, in general, fermented foods are what I would describe as acquired tastes. And you know, cheese offers such a great illustration of this. You know, as my taste has evolved, like, I love really ripe, stinky cheeses that you can smell from 100 feet away. But I definitely have learned that not everybody shares my passion for these kinds of strong flavors. But fermentation creates strong flavors, and not everybody loves every flavor of fermentation. But, you know, once people learn to love them, they tend to get very passionate about them. And this is why what you find stocked in gourmet stores are almost exclusively products of fermentation, because it creates these, you know, compelling, exciting flavors. But some of the flavors are things that, you know, are definitely acquired tastes.
As we wrap up, Sandor, are you seeing a big turning point here? Are people listening? Are we seeing more people get into fermented foods?
Well, I mean, you know, I think that certainly there is a growing awareness of fermentation and interest in fermentation. I don't think that the foods and beverages that are products of fermentation really ever waned in popularity. But certainly there's greater interest. I think partly because of the greater interest in bacteria and the greater understanding that, you know, we really need to you know, restore biodiversity in our guts for health. And the other is, I think that just in general, people are getting more interested in, you know, food, how it's produced, where it comes from, what kinds of processes it undergoes. And once you start, you know, interrogating your food and asking questions about how it's prepared, fermentation just is always part of the answer.
Sandor, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Sandor Katz, food writer, DIY food activist, and self-proclaimed fermentation revivalist. His books include The Art of Fermentation and Wild Fermentation. You can catch him at Fermentation Fest, which starts this weekend in Reedsburg. For details, go to fermentationfest.com.